Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
As we know, a new Netflix series is due out next year called House of Guinness, which will tell the story of one of Ireland's and indeed Europe's most famous dynasties, the Guinness family. So with that in mind, we wanted to explore our fascination with films and TV series based around families, and film critic Brian Lloyd is here to take us through some of his favourites. Good morning, Brian.
How you doing?
Thank you for joining us.
No problem.
So what is it about shows about families that makes them so popular with viewers? Because they have been a constant since the dawn of TV and film, really.
Oh, yeah. And you could even argue, like, you know, go back to Shakespeare and stuff like that. Like, look at Macbeth and, you know, his marriage with Lady Macbeth. I think the whole thing about the fascination with family is that it's the crucible in which people are formed. You know, you talk about something like birthing order, for example, you know, like the middle child, the youngest child, the eldest child, their relationships together and how they're formed. I mean, that's character tropes. Mm-hmm. Even talk about, you know, a matriarch in a family, a patriarch in a family and what have you. Those are very, very strong characters that we then identify with, and how we learn about power dynamics in the world around us is shaped by what we learn growing up as either a sibling or as just a, you know, three-person family unit. You know?
And there always has to be a little bit of dysfunction for this to
100%.
Work, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's more than a little in some cases.
Yeah, and not only that as well, but I mean, what family, unless it's the Waltons or something like that, what family on either, you know, film, television, theatre, or whatever you want to call it, is functional, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of way. Like, we are all identify with dysfunction because most of our families are dysfunctional in some way or another. So we recognise that in film and TV, what we see in our own families.
Mm-hmm. And we love them here in Ireland. I mean, going back years and years.
The Reardons.
The Reardons, Dallas, Dynasty.
Dynasty.
Huge in Ireland, even though they were big American TV shows.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, you look at something like Dallas, for example. I mean, the kind of the dynamic of that, you know, the Ewings, I mean, that's, you could easily transpose that to something like Succession. Like, you know, the idea of, you know, the domineering patriarch. Well, that's Jock Ewing. Go look at Dynasty. You have John Carlyle's character. You know, J.R. and Bobby Ewing fighting it out for control of Ewing Oil. I mean, that's Shiv Roy and Kendall Roy trying to fight it out for Waystar Royco mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So the idea of, like, family and business is something that's very, very common in these family dramas. Because
Dinny and Miley and Glenroe.
Yeah.
And, you know, the direction of the sheep farm.
So exactly. Where's all going on? And then when the revenue turned up as well and they saw all the bales and they were like, oh, that's a lot of bales, you know, for that, for the kind
well
of...
remembered, Brian.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Now, the positive examples, going back to Happy Days or Home and Away, you mentioned the Waltons as well.
Yeah.
Like, you have those images of perfection.
Exactly. And I mean, to be fair, I think those are very, generally tend to be very American because it's built into the idea of, like, you know, picket fences and the idea of the all-American family, you know, meeting together. Even more recent examples like Seventh Heaven and stuff like that. Like, there's that element of, you know, people yearn for a cohesive family unit. They yearn for something kind of idealized and sentimental, but in reality, it's probably closer to something like, you know, The Simpsons or Roseanne or something mm-hmm. like that. That's probably more authentic. In fact, I would argue the most realistic portrayal of a family unit with an element of comedy in it is Roseanne. I mean, you look at how John Connor, played by John Goodman, how they kind of interacted with one another. The fact that they sometimes ribbed each other, you know, there was a lot of kind of anguish kind of going on. The fact that his job wasn't going so well and stuff like that. I mean, that's very, very
loved
real.
That show.
So good. Like, and so smart as well. Like, I mean, for a sitcom and for something that you kind of think is disposable TV, it was very real in parts. Like, I mean, look what was happening with, you know, like Lurleen and like the Next Door Neighbor and stuff like that. There were so many stories in that really touched on very real points in, you know, society that just weren't talked about in dramatic kind of scenarios, but were talked about in the sitcom.
And you mentioned the matriarchal figure. I mean, you had Roseanne there sort of struggling to figure out how to deal with different things she was faced with, which was unusual because
completely
in those American shows, the mother always knew what to do, what the right course of action was, and Roseanne often didn't.
No, not at all. In fact, her issues were very much kind of at the forefront of the show. And I think, again, that was completely unusual. And you saw it being replicated in other shows, like kind of like Grace Under Fire was another one, where that was about a recovering alcoholic mm-hmm. trying to get her family back together and all the rest of it. And again, for a sitcom, you would think that's pretty strange. Even go further and look at something like Sybil with Sybil Shepherd. Where that was about, you know, a single mother recently divorced with a grown up daughter trying to kind of get her career back on track. Again, family unit. But again, not the typical, you know, 3.5 kids and, you know, the mother kind of sort of about the dad and all the rest of it.
Yeah, not having all the answers. Yeah. So you picked out a few favourites and you're starting with one that some would say is the greatest TV show ever made. It is, you
it
say.
It is. I mean, look, no, it is. I mean, like, I know it's almost a cliche to say it, but The Sopranos is arguably... I would argue, is probably the greatest TV show of the modern era. And the reason why that is because it basically took, you know, the kind of the complexity and the nuances that we would generally associate with film and then managed to bring it into TV, and also had the production values. It also had the cast go along with it as well. I mean, it even changed how we view kind of, you know, crime drama, you know, that sort of way. Like the idea of James Gandolfini, who was this, you know, tough, unrelenting mob boss, but he frequently went to a psychiatrist. He had clinical depression. He had, you know, all this massive gamut of emotions, this really complex character, you know. Mm-hmm. He frequently cheated on his wife, yet he was incredibly caring to his daughter, Meadow Soprano, and his son as well. And then when his son gets into self-harm and stuff like that, there's this great kind of depth of emotion for his son, and then like the complex relationship that he had with his cousin Christopher Moltisanti and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was just going to say that to you, that you get to see that contrast between how he treated his direct family and how his cousins and his nephews
and then his henchmen as well. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
yeah. So like, even, you know, they describe The Sopranos as a family, as in the wider kind of criminal enterprise, if you like, but then his own family is just as relevant and important in the series. I mean, even Carmela Soprano, played by the brilliant Edie Falco, I mean, she's just as much an accomplice in his criminal enterprise as everyone else mm-hmm. is, yet she tries to kind of convince herself that she's not involved and she doesn't have anything to do with it, and she's just sort of along for the ride or whatever, you know.
Now, Arrested Development is the next one. Isn't this the one that they discontinued and everyone was going, huh? Why did that happen?
Yeah, so what happened was there was 3 seasons of it on Fox in the US, and then for some reason, no one's entirely sure, they cancelled it. Then Netflix brought it back for another 2 seasons. It didn't work out quite as well. But this, I mean, the show begins as it does, you know, the story of a wealthy family who lost everything, then one son played by Jason Bateman who has to bring them all together. It was shot in very much sort of like a kind of fly in the wall documentary about this family trying to right the wrong of their property development company. Mm-hmm. Jason Bateman is the straight man. I mean, the straight man and the goof, I mean, that's a tried and tested comedic formula, but this was a straight man and then a completely wackadoo family, and that just kind of amplifies the comedy even more, I think.
Yeah, Jason Bateman is one of those people
very dry.
Yeah, but he tends to have a lot of success.
He does, doesn't he? Even, you know, Ozark.
A lot of things that he touches tend to do well. And even you describing Arrested Development there reminds me a lot of the premise behind Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, very true. Like, Schitt's Creek and Arrested Development do have a lot of similarities. What I would argue is that Arrested Development is a lot more caustic and a lot more sharper than Schitt's Creek. Not to say that Schitt's Creek isn't funny, it absolutely is, but I do think kind of in the later episodes of Schitt's Creek there was a tend to be a little bit more kind of gentler, a little bit more sentimental. I think the fact that, you know, you had Dan Levy and Eugene Levy as father and son in that, I mean, there was trying to kind of reach that sort of like harmony, I guess, mm-hmm. whereas in Arrested Development, I mean, they just bounced off each other. It was a lot more madcap, a lot more funny, I think.
Edgier,
yeah.
Okay, and now we come to the big one, which I think right now, that when you think about family dynamics, this show, Succession, is really front of mind, isn't it? Because it's the most recent, most brilliant one that we have.
It is, yeah. I mean, the fact that it was based on the Murdochs, you know, however much they want to, Jesse Armstrong, the creator, wants to deny it.
No, it wasn't.
It absolutely was. It 100% was based on the Murdochs. And, you know, this is a world that is kind of shrouded in mystery. You know, they're going to court with each other and all the rest of it. No one's really sure what's going on. Succession was a dramatization of that, but it felt very, very real. I mean, the dynamics, even if they are, you know, multi-billionaires fighting over a media company, you know, if you have an older brother, chances are you're probably going to be sniping at him every now and then. If you've got a younger sister, you're going to be pushing him out to the side. And if you have a domineering father and all the rest of it, everyone is trying to edge their way up in terms of, you know, attention and stuff like that. I think the way that Brian Cox played, you know, Logan Roy, I mean, it's one of those great performances, you know, like it's done very subtly. It's done with a lot of kind of thought and temperance to it. But when he delivers certain lines, it's absolutely devastating. I mean, the one that always kind of I always think of is when he meets them. It's in the final kind of season. And he says, you know, look, I love you all, but you're not serious people. I mean, that is just devastating. You know?
Yeah.
And it's done.
He was horrible, though.
It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible.
But I mean, in general, he was a horrible character.
And that, yet that is the mark of a great writing and great performance, is that you were still watching him. You were still kind of just mesmerized by him. And I think that's something as well that in the later episodes they covered very well, which was that, you know, they knew he was a terrible person, yet they were still fighting for him. They were still fighting for his attention. Like, I think it was Kendall Roy that said it, where he goes, I love you, I can't forgive you, but I love you, but it's okay. And this was as he was dying. And I mean, so, for a show that was kind of built as a comedy, it had such great drama in it, I think.
None of those characters, though, were likable.
No, none. None at all.
The further you went into it, and you'd, at times, I'd try to like Kendall maybe for 5 minutes and then go, I'm sorry, can't, I'm gone.
Did you feel sorry for them?
Yeah, but you remember the rap?
Excruciating. Yeah, but I will say, yes, you didn't like them, but I do think you empathise with them. I think that's the thing of it. Like, they were, some of them were completely despicable in what they did, but at the same time, there was almost a sense of, like, these poor people, like, you know, they've got all the money in the world and they're completely miserable and they're still trying to knife each other in the back and everything else. Like, you did feel an empathy for them. And I think that's an example of great writing, you know?
Yeah, well, it was certainly one of the most gripping things that we have seen on television in recent times. So in films then, you've gone, unsurprisingly, I think, for The Godfather, given that you think The Sopranos is the greatest show on TV ever.
It follows that The Godfather would be the same as well. Yeah. And it's not, again, what I think is interesting about The Godfather is that, you know, Mario Puzo, who wrote the original novel, and Francis Ford Coppola, who directed it, I mean, both of them were obsessed by the Kennedys. And that was, they were such a powerful influence on American culture, be it in pop culture or just in political and social landscape. And the idea of, like, this tight-knit family unit that were initially immigrants. I mean, Joseph P. Kennedy was pretty much in, you know, in the crime business up until he started to legitimize it and all the rest of it. So there was this idea of, you know, a family of immigrants trying to ingratiate themselves into American institutions. And by doing that, then they lose part of their souls along the way. So when you come to The Godfather Part Two, and the final scene of it is, you know, Al Pacino's Michael Corleone has completely secured the family's legacy for generations to come. They're rich, they're powerful and all the rest of it. But he's completely alone and isolated. And he's even, spoiler alert, has killed his own brother in the process to do it. And it's that idea of, in order to become, quote unquote, fully American, they have to cut out parts of their souls in order to ingratiate themselves. And that's sort of, you know, the tragedy of the American experience. Mm-hmm.
So then we have The Royal Tenenbaums, which also has echoes of Succession, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, The Royal Tenenbaums is a lot more kind of quirky, I think. And again, it's that idea of people vying for the attention of a patriarch who is not exactly the best person to begin with. Gene Hackman, which I think is, you know, one of his most iconic, brilliant roles, playing Royal Tenenbaum, who's this con man of a lawyer who manages to weasel his way back into his family's good graces. And then you have this great ensemble cast, you know, Ben Stiller, Gwyneth Paltrow, Luke Wilson, Owen Wilson, Angelica Houston, Danny Glover. It's fantastic.
Doesn't Gene Hackman's character pretend to be dying?
Yeah, he pretends to have stomach cancer. Yeah, and then you see him eating a chicken,
it's coming
cheeseburger.
Back to me now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I mean, it's all about style, because the director Wes Anderson is known for having this very kind of fussy, you know, very particular style. But it's a really human story. It's that idea of, like, you know, you're having a dad, and you know, having a dad, and he's a bit of a crook, and he's a bit of a wide kind of character, and all the rest of it. But you still love them in spite of that, and you still want their attention and their affection. I mean, that's what Succession was about. I think in Royal Tenenbaums it's drawn in a more sort of comedic way.
So then how much do we know about House of Guinness? Has anything been emerging about it? Are we going to love it as much as we did Succession?
Yeah, well, the cast has been announced, and great wealth of Irish talent. I understand they are going to be filming here as well.
Good news.
Stephen Knight, who previously created Peaky Blinders, is going to be involved in it. Netflix Netflix are putting a lot of money and resources behind it. So yeah, the idea is that this is going to be one of their marquee shows. It's fascinating. I mean, I'm from Clane. I've lived near where the Guinness compound was and all the rest of it, and Leixlip and stuff like that. So it's quite powerful. And they're still a part of Irish society, you know, that sort of way. Marina Guinness is still living there in Leixlip and all the rest of it.
Well, look, it's one to look forward to, House of Guinness. The other big one, of course, that's being released this week is The Perfect Couple, which might fit into this genre as well. This is the Nicole Kidman. There's a lot of noise around this as well, isn't there?
Liev Schreiber,
high expectations.
And Jack Rayner as well is going to be in it. Yeah, and it's about this kind of family. Again, it's sort of what we were kind of talking about with Happy Days and with the Waltons, and the idea of a perfect couple, a perfect family, but there's a lot of darkness underneath, mm-hmm. and they're all trying to do something devious, kind of shady stuff. I mean, I do think it probably is more in the kind of glossy, desperate housewives lured kind of stuff, but yeah, I'll be interested.
Nothing wrong
to
with
see
that,
it.
Brian.
No, not at all. Far from it. No, Desperate Housewives is great. I love that.
It's September. We're all sitting in watching stuff, and we'll probably be watching that. Thank you so much. Great to see you. That's Brian Lloyd, film critic.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.